From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark, here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. And, of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about, Zorba.
You know, we're going to talk about children, and we know it's important to read to your kids. We know that's important for brain development. But what about encouraging your kids to play? New information that came out in a mission statement from the American Academy of Pediatrics that I think is dynamite and really important. And then we're going to talk about controversy, herbicide in Cheerios. Roundup, is it real? Is it not real? How do you handle controversies when that comes up for what you're going to eat?
Ouch. Speaking of eating, our recipe?
Lentils. Now, you may not think of lentils as an important thing to eat. You know, it's inexpensive, so we're not talking about something that's really expensive, like, you know, like salmon that comes from the Copper River in Seattle. But lentils are an important food. We're going to talk about lentils. It is a listener recipe. That's Miriam's coming. Lentils.
Yeah, you say we don't talk about, I don't ever talk about lentils.
You are never, you
but
never
sit down. Don't tell Miriam.
I mean, come on, you don't sit down with Monica and say, hey, let's talk lentils. I mean, come on, isn't that a common topic of conversation?
Let's talk
lentils today.
Let's get to the phones at 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us now, Zorba, a listener in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hi.
Well, what's your question?
Well, I've been recently diagnosed with hemochromatosis.
Mm-hmm.
I am wondering what are some of the foods that I should avoid, or what are some of the foods that I could eat that would help me, help my blood level?
Yeah. First, Zorba, tell us about what his problem is.
Well, hemochromatosis is basically making too much blood. So what are they doing for you? Tell me what your treatment is. Tell everyone what your treatment is.
Okay. Well, I've been bloodletting for almost 2 years, which is just giving blood about every 2 weeks.
Every two weeks. Okay.
Every 2 weeks, yep. But I know there's iron in everything that I eat. And,
right.
Anyway, I'm giving blood quite often, and I just want to know what kind of things to eat.
You know, one of the things that's interesting is you're giving blood. Do you know what they do with the blood that you give?
I donated it, which actually makes me feel kind of good.
So excellent. That's an excellent way to do it, because sometimes they'll do bloodletting for hemochromatosis because you're making too much, and they actually don't use it as donated blood. And they, you know, the Red Cross, for years, it's been discussed whether or not they should do that, and they've made some changes in doing that, so you're actually doing some good with the extra blood that you're producing.
Right.
You know, it's an overproduction problem that you do. I don't really know exactly why it occurs. What have they recommended to you? What did your hematologist talk to you about this in terms of any food?
He said really anything red meat I should probably stay away from, but I can't do that. I love meat.
You and Tom.
Yeah.
If I told Tom he couldn't have red meat, Tom, what would you say if you couldn't have red meat?
I actually don't have red meat very often.
Well,
you've
changed. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
You've stopped eating red meat. When was the last time you had a burger?
8-10 months.
What'd you have for dinner yesterday? So basically staying away from red meat, because red meat has iron in it. That's where we get most of our iron. And that's...
And spinach, green-type vegetables.
Right.
And I love vegetables as well. So I kind of feel like it's a little bit of a curse.
Well, it is a curse in some ways, and in other ways, it's a blessing for the Red Cross, because you give iron, you give blood every 2 weeks. It's a problem we solve with that, and to my knowledge, you're going to have to continue doing this. I don't know of any other treatment that exists for this other than that. You got to do it, because otherwise, you have too many iron stores, and you can have lots of medical problems from this, from storing that iron.
Well, I was told that that's what George Washington had, and they used to use leeches to get the blood out.
Well, you know, back in the day, they used leeches for everything. And George Washington, he might have had hemochromatosis, but they might have just used leeches. When George Washington had something called Quincy was a strep infection, you know, strep throat. Obviously, they didn't have penicillin back in the 1700s. Mm-hmm. And he basically suffocated from these enlarged tonsils. And nobody, they knew how to go in and do a tracheostomy because they actually did that for people. But nobody wanted to touch George Washington. And so he really died and suffocated because he was George Washington. Nobody actually wanted to treat him. He'd still be alive today had they simply treated him. Yeah, so keep on using those leeches. I think the Red Cross is far better than leeches for the treatment. And you're right. There's no other specific diet other than avoiding iron, and you're still going to have to give blood every 2 to 4 weeks.
Okay. So. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks. Thanks for sharing.
We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413.
You like that. He'd still be alive today. They gave leeches for everything. Anytime anyone had a problem, they put leeches on, and they thought that basically bloodletting, getting rid of bad blood, was good until probably the late 1800s when science came in and actually took over medicine. You know, you can just imagine. Here it was for everything. You were schizophrenic, they would try to take out the bad humors with leeches.
Interesting. So, Zorba, before our next call, the American Academy of Pediatrics says that you doctors should prescribe playtime.
Well, a very interesting issue. So, first of all, we know reading is important. In fact, in our office, we have a program called Reach Out and Read, where we've gotten donations. And at certain times, we give kids books in the office, no matter who they are, whether they can afford a book or not, as part of their well-baby check. We give them books, and we give it to them starting at 6 months old. And, you know, kids obviously don't read at 6 months. They're board books, and they pick up the book, and they chew the book. But the idea is to begin to get them used to the fact that you look at a book, it's important to the brain. They look at pictures and they begin to look at those things because we know that abstract symbols such as writing are very important for the development of the brain. But the secondary issue that's really important now is playtime for children. So when you go to a restaurant, I'm sure it's happened to you, Tom, when you go out to eat, you'll see people sitting at a table and they're not talking, right? They're looking at their phone.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
They're sitting there. And there are four people at a restaurant. They're all looking at their phone. They're not interacting. They're waiting for the food to arrive. And it looks to me to be dumb and stupid because they are not interacting. They're interacting with their phone and they're not talking to one another. And it's a different form of interaction. Well, it is a different form of interaction. And the estimate now is that children are spending 30% less time playing with one another than they used to.
Oh,
they're sitting with their portable computer, that's what it is, and with the portable computer, and that's what they're doing versus going out and playing. And so this is a problem. And the reason why it's a problem is lots of things are going on in play. Lots of stuff is going on with your child. There's abstract thinking because you're using your imagination when you're playing. There's social interaction because you're talking to other kids who are around a plane and you're interacting with them. There is physical interaction because you're physically, your fingers are not as important as moving your body and your muscle. And there are a whole bunch of things that occur within play.
None of those things are reading, though.
Well, my point is we have been concentrating on reading and we have not been concentrating on playing. And in other words, when we do well baby checks now in our office, we're now going to begin to say, does your child go out and play? We don't talk about that much. We're talking about reading, the importance of reading to your child every night.
Yeah.
But we don't talk about the fact that your kid gone out and played with other kids or gone to another house and played with other kids. They may be in structured events, but are they going out and just hanging out with other children and playing? And what happens to a society that we raise, where we raise children that don't do that, that they think FaceTime, you know, when they're on Facebook, that they really have friends.
Yeah.
I mean, a friend on Facebook is not the same as walking around playing with a friend.
Yeah,
it is not the same friend.
This is
not the same thing.
I think if you're a parent, this is a hard thing to do. If you encourage your kid to go out and play, there have to be other kids that are playing.
Well, no, you bring up an important point. What are you going to do? Well, there are other parents who have the same thing, and that's where society begins to change. And, you know, you have to have more and more structured playtime, and then you have to, just like we limit screen time, because we say too much screen time isn't good for a child as they grow up. The answer is, what are you putting in place? You're not going to put in TV time, and it's interaction time. Well, one of the things you can do with a child is you can play with them. What's wrong with that?
Well.
Now, what do you mean, well? As a grandparent, you know, playtime is there. So I decided, for instance.
It's certainly a different kind of playtime.
Well, but if there's some playtime. I mean, it's the fact is.
No, I get it.
Playtime is playtime is playtime. So it's not just playtime with that. And I find something very interesting here, because this goes along with another study that showed that parents at soccer games, little league games, baseball games, often miss the goal of their child or the goal the child is doing, because they're on their phones texting and they're not watching their kids. So the whole issue is, we've got this wonderful thing of a portable computer that we can do lots of things with, but we don't pay attention to the off switch. And I think it's extremely important for us to talk about that so that we develop things. And that's what this says. Playtime for your child is as important as reading to your child at night. And we have to wake up, smell the coffee, and actually do that. And it's important as you're raising a child to say, am I having them go out and play? What does that mean? Am I bringing them to another house? And that's why the American Academy of Pediatrics is beginning to make a stand on it. That's an important part of parenting.
Yeah, believe it. Underline that, because it really is important.
Yeah, very important. Yes, absolutely. I mean, we're not going to go back to the 50s. God forbid we should go back to the 50s anyway, because in the 50s, we didn't have the immunizations that we have now. We have good things now. Yeah. We have a portable computer. But let's move to the 2020s and raise a good population of children who know how to go out and kick the can.
800-462-7413 is our number. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
I'd like to ask the doctor a question on blood pressure.
You've got high blood pressure?
Yes, I do.
Okay. How long have you had it?
About 6 years I've been on medication.
Mm-hmm. See, how old are you?
74.
Well, so you got a medication late. You led a good life?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, usually that's the case. What's your height? What's your weight?
152.
Mm-hmm. And your height?
5'10".
So you're at a good height. You live in the state of Wisconsin. You're only 152. What happened to that extra 100 pounds the governor gives you when you come in the state? You didn't want that extra 100 pounds. I mention that because often people develop high blood pressure younger, in mid-age, used to be called old age back in the 1900s, mm-hmm. but back in the 50s. So you've had it for 6 years. You must exercise on a regular basis?
I ran up until about 4 years ago, about 20 miles a week, but I blew a knee, so I quit running.
Yeah, 20 miles a week is quite a lot. What do you do now for exercise?
Walk the dogs. And work in the yard.
Walk the dogs. That means you've got more than one dog. What kind of dogs are they?
German Shepherd and a Golden Retriever.
Oh, wonderful. Mm. Well, they a lot of food, a lot of exercise.
Keep them busy.
So what's your blood pressure question?
I had a wellness checkup with my doctor about the end of April.
Okay.
And I complained about tightness in my chest, coughing, and dry mouth. Mm-hmm. I was taking 125 milligrams of amitriptyline each night for sleep. He cut the amitriptyline down. He says, I probably don't need it anymore. Mm-hmm. No, I don't. No. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I said, could I get a stress test, thinking I could just get a treadmill test hooked up to the wires, and that's it. But he prescribed a nuclear stress test.
Okay, different stress test, sure.
And I went and did the nuclear stress test and got home and got a phone call from the hospital saying, don't do anything. Your test was abnormal. Okay. We want you to come in for an ultrasound tomorrow morning. So I went in for the ultrasound, and they did that, and I talked with the cardio doctor, and he said, well, we couldn't see anything wrong with the ultrasound. What happened with the nuclear test was that I did the test, got my heartbeat up to 128 beats, and when it was done, the data looked like a seismograph of Hawaii at the very end.
Got it. So the echo, so the ultrasound, which is an echo, they did, and the echo looked okay. So what'd they do?
I was on amlodipine and hydrochlorothiazide, and the doctor took me off the amlodipine.
Okay.
And put me on a beta blocker called Nadol. And he said, take, we'll put you on this.
Okay.
And we'll see how things go.
Sure. What's your blood pressure running?
It runs anywhere from 150 when I first get up in the morning till it's to 114 late at night.
So it's 150 when you get up in the morning?
Yes.
Okay.
Before I take my medication. Yeah.
That's too high.
Yes.
That's the answer. That's too high. And most heart attacks occur from 6 o'clock in the morning to 9 o'clock in the morning. And one theory is because our blood pressure is not covered during that time. And waking up does a lot to our body. We go from sleep and we wake up and our pressure goes up. So what you got to do is talk to your doc and say, hey, my blood pressure is too high in the morning. They may change the amount of medication, may take when you change the medication, may have you take the medication. You taking it once a day or twice a day?
Once a day.
May change it, keep on the same dose, might put you on it twice a day, once in the morning, once at night, or change the amount. But you want to get that blood pressure really without side effects in below 130, and you want the diastolic around 80. That's really, that's the ideal. That's the goal. Many people can get it without side effects. You don't want it too low at your age, but you don't want it too high. So it sounds like what they did a screening test. Screening tests will pick up lots of abnormalities that aren't there. The goal is to pick up all the abnormalities, but there's noise in the system.
Well, so the doctor did say that everything looked good. He says, we wish people younger than you looked as good.
That's right. So the final test said, hey, you've got a good heart. We don't have to worry about it. So that's the case. Now it's only a question of what's the right blood pressure medicine. Based on that, they gave you a beta blocker and hydrochlorothiazide, a diuretic, very good combination. But you need that morning pressure to be lower. So you call up your doc and say it's not low enough in the morning. They'll make some changes and transition in that. And then once you're stable, you check your blood pressure once a month or once every 2 months. Once it's at the right spot. Then you follow up with your doc once a year. You're doing a great job. Keep walking. Eat a more Mediterranean diet. But I want to tell you, I've got good news and bad news for you. Here's the good news. If you do what you're doing and continue doing what you're doing, you're probably going to live well into your 90s. That's the good news. Here's the bad news. You might run out of money. So you better be careful and not spend too much.
Well, I do spend a lot of money on olive oil.
On olive oil. Money well spent. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. At 800-462-7413. And before we take a break, Zorba, time again now to fire off another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc.
Disagreeing with the Doc. Disagreeing with the Doc. Oh, oh, oh.
The following email came to us from a listener named George in Ogden, Utah. He writes, Dr. Zorba, I've heard you talk about...
I like the way you say Dr. Zorba. Very good. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to imitate it.
I got it. I like it.
I heard you talk...
You ought to go into acting sometime. I think you'd be good. You know, like Guess Who's Coming, you know, and there's some really good roles for you. A radio role. That's what
okay.
you should do. I'm sorry. Please, go on.
George says, I heard you talk about the benefits of drinking coffee.
Yes.
Well, my family and I aren't coffee drinkers because of how we've been raised. We are of the Mormon faith and feel that drinking coffee is a detriment to good health. One reason is because of the tannic acid in the coffee. You don't seem to consider this, and I wish that you would do so.
Well, the reality is you may believe the coffee is bad for your health, but there's no evidence that it's bad for
your
health.
What about the tannic acid?
What about it? What about it? The tannic acid. The reality is people have been trying to say the coffee has been bad for generations. The Mormons, of course, it's part of their faith not to have coffee, not to have alcohol, and to do other things, and that's their culture. Absolutely fine. But the reality is for the rest of us, coffee is just fine, and it is a salubrious. Now, the Puritans also do not drink coffee, but the Puritans are not around anymore. So,
George, you ought to know, and our listeners ought to know, that Zorba drinks about 9 cups of coffee a day.
I do not drink 9 cups of coffee a day. But before I came in and did this, I did have a nice big cup. I actually had 2 cups of coffee this morning, a shot of espresso. And, hey, that's the only way I get going in the morning. Otherwise, I'd be sleeping all day.
Do you disagree with Zorba? Let us know by posting on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Our tasty recipe coming up, along with more of your calls, of course, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, we have a listener recipe. Let's welcome Miriam Gershow from Ontario, Canada. Hi, Miriam.
Hi, Tom. What a treat to be on with you. Thank you.
What a treat to have you with us for Miriam's Lentils.
Miriam's Lentils. And you know what? You want to hear something funny? If somebody's tuning in who doesn't know your show but knows me, they'll think it's some kind of a comedy hour because Miriam and recipe just don't normally go together. Yes, I'm not known for knowing how to cook, and I don't know how to cook. And I have what they call, my friends call, a non-kitchen.
A non-kitchen. So non-kitchen. What is a non-kitchen?
Well, you know, years ago when I was young and my friends and I would sit around talking about what our dream home would be like, mm-hmm. mostly my friends would talk about their dream kitchens. And when it came my turn, I said that my dream home wouldn't have a kitchen. Yeah, so I do like to eat healthy food. Mm-hmm. I live alone, so mm-hmm. and my daughter is all grown, and I'm on my own, and I prepare simple things. And one day I was at a friend's house, and she served a number of Middle Eastern dishes. And one of them had lentils in it, and that was my first experience with lentils. I really liked them. And I said, what is this? And she said that she makes it with three ingredients, mm-hmm. Lentils, rice, and onion. Mm-hmm. Well, I like all three of those
uh-huh.
things.
Okay.
So one day I tried it. I fried up some onions.
Oh. Huh.
And
shock of shocks.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of labor-intensive, actually. Cause, you know, you have to chop them first.
Yes, you do.
And then I opened a can of lentils.
Uh-huh, okay.
Threw it in, mm-hmm. and then I cooked up a little bit of rice. Mm-hmm. I do have a little tiny rice cooker,
uh-huh.
and I mixed the three together.
Mm-hmm. And lo and behold.
It was so good that I started making this on a regular basis. I found out that I like it cold for mm-hmm. breakfast.
Ooh.
It freezes really well.
Oh.
And so I would make up a big batch, divide it into containers, mm-hmm. one portion, freeze uh-huh. it. The thing is, I found that my preference was that all three ingredients would be of equal size.
So it was sort of the equivalent of like a cup of lentils, a can of lentils, an equal amount of rice, and an equal amount of onions?
Exactly.
Oh.
But once you fry them up, the onions seem to get a little smaller.
Right, sure.
And then I tried different kinds of onions, but I came back to the regular cooking onion mm-hmm. for some reason. Then I tried different rice, different mm-hmm. kinds of rice, and I ended up, my favorite turns out to be brown basmati rice.
Uh-huh.
I never went to dry lentils. Mm-hmm. My friends tell me it's much more economical, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't know what to do. It's too hard.
it's too labor-intensive.
Too labor-intensive. It takes, like, I don't really like to spend more than 5 minutes in the kitchen, if I can help it. So this has become a staple. I eat it, maybe four or five times a week.
Uh-huh. Oh, really? Has become your staple.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I have two or three staples. Another day I'll tell you about other staples. But,
well, I have to tell you something interesting about
this.
So
please.
First of all, very interestingly, there was a study that came out that I wrote about a few months ago. And the study talked about there's something called the glycemic index. The glycemic index is, you know, how fast carbohydrates turn into sugar in your body. And so sugar is the perfect example of a high glycemic index. Sugar in your body gets absorbed. The body says, hey, I need more insulin. And this may lead to diabetes, and it certainly leads to obesity and other things. Turns out that when you mix lentils with rice, or when you mix lentils with potatoes, but mix lentils with lettuce, the glycemic index drops by 30 to 40%.
In
other words,
kidding.
The lentils reduces how quickly the rice gets converted into sugar. And when using brown rice, which converts into sugar more slowly than white rice, you've got a reduction, I would estimate, of about 50%. So in other words, this is better for your body, and is less. If you eat this, it is less likely to lead to diabetes. You have a very healthy food. The other thing about lentils is lentils are loaded with protein. So a cup of rice has hardly any protein, and a cup of lentils has something like 15 to 20% of the protein you need for your entire day. So this is actually an incredibly healthy dish.
Oh, lovely, lovely.
Well, I must tell you something. You have your recipe that you've come up with is an incredibly healthy recipe with a reduced glycemic index and a high protein recipe. It's an excellent vegetarian recipe that everyone should try. And once again, there's a palette for any spice people would want to have. You could add curry to this. You could add anything to this, but I would just add salt and pepper and live with it. And for a non-cooker like Tom, he might even try this. Thank you, thank you, thank you for sharing this.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you both.
Thanks.
Our pleasure. Indeed.
Our pleasure.
All the best, eh?
Thanks,
bye
Miriam.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. So, wasn't that good?
Oh, fantastic, fantastic.
To get a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org or, of course, through Facebook.
Now back to the phones we go, Zorba, at 800-462-7413, 1-800-462-7413. And now let's see if we can help a listener in Portland, Oregon. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I have had biometric screenings, and it's a thing I do every year as a part of my health assessment. And I've noticed that it really depends on the amount of time that I fast before I take the screening.
Mm-hmm. What kind of time do you fast for?
Well, I had been doing just what they said, just like the night before, and doing according to the hours. I forget where they said 8 or 10 hours, and I followed it to the letter. Mm-hmm. And I would get results that were good. I should tell you that I'm almost 60. And the results, they don't have a gradient scale for age. So I'm a little disadvantaged there because of my age anyway. But
what are the numbers that you're concerned about?
My LDL is at 110 and my HDL is at 96.
What's your total cholesterol?
221.
Okay, but your HDL is how high again?
96.
Unbelievable. So in one part of your family, you must have longevity. There must be one side of the family that has longevity.
Yes, yes.
Which side is that?
My dad, he's like 96 now.
I've got to tell you something. People would die for those cholesterol numbers. I mean, those numbers are awesome. So first of all, nobody, if you've got an HDL cholesterol in the 91 range, that means you've got longevity unless something is going wrong. That is an awesome high-density cholesterol. You will never need cholesterol medications. I would be shocked if you ever need them. Never need them at all. And your cholesterol, your total cholesterol may seem higher. That's because you've got a ton of good cholesterol, twice the normal cholesterol, 2 to 3 times what the normal HDL is. And that's why that number may be a little high. The goal of the bad cholesterol has been kind of below 130. That's kind of the goal. You're at 110, so you're cool. You know, you did a one, like you said, you did a total fast to see what those numbers are. But you've got your dad's cholesterol. You're going to live a long life. You do not need cholesterol lowering medications under any condition. Okay. You're eating the right way. Your numbers are stellar. Now, do you smoke cigarettes?
No.
Good, because that's one way to screw things up. Do you exercise?
Yes.
What do you do?
Well, I live on a farm.
You live on a farm. That's exercise.
I dig a lot of holes, and I plant a lot of plants.
Uh-huh.
I have a John Deere tractor. Uh-huh. I get off and on a lot. So.
But that really is better. But that defines exercise. You live on a farm. You must eat during the season a lot of fruits and vegetables.
Yes. Mostly I eat fruits and vegetables, and I like fish, and I like the only thing that I eat that they tell me sometimes I shouldn't eat is the eggs. I really like my eggs.
I got to tell you something. With everything you're doing, I wouldn't worry about the eggs at all. And your dad's, like you said, your dad's in his 90s. You've got his genes. So just remember, you've got to save your money because you're going to live well into your 90s. And if you don't want to be a Walmart greeter, you got to save your money.
Well, the funny thing about it is when the risk assessment online, it said I had high risk of stroke.
It's not. If your blood pressure, how's your blood pressure?
Blood pressure is 100 over 62.
Well, that's bogus. You do not have a high risk of stroke.
Okay.
Forget the online stuff. You've got great cholesterol, great blood pressure. You don't smoke cigarettes. You eat right and you exercise the right way. You are the poster child for longevity. Keep up the good work and save your money.
All right. All right. Now tell me, though, why do my results differ a lot depending on the amount of time I fast?
Well, first of all, they vary. Results vary by 10 to 20%. That's the nature of it. If you get your cholesterol checked every single day at the same time, it'll vary by 10 to 20%. So that's variation. You sort of add it all together. But the HDL cholesterol in your case is what counts. And that number is probably going to remain fairly high, and that's what counts. So we do a more fasting ones. They're just more accurate, but they just vary. That's what they do. Average them all together. Awesome. As I said, people would die for those numbers.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate
you
that call. People would die for those numbers.
I like
you really want to say that, Zorba?
It's a phrase, Tom. It's a phrase.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. Now, before the break, Zorba, let's fire up our newest segment on the show, where you, Zorba, a real-life doctor, clarify something a listener has read on the Internet. We call it Google Doc.
You know, I am dancing to it.
The following email came to us from a listener named Jim in Wausau, Wisconsin. He writes, Dr. Pastor, are vitamin D supplements advisable and in what amount? I've been taking D3 1,000 capsules. I also take a multivitamin, and my current one also has 1,000 units of D3. I also read somewhere that it's possible to take too much vitamin D, and another source said it should be taken at the meal when one also ingests the most calcium. Is any of this true?
You know, if you go to the web, you'll find a bunch of things. Like, get up in the middle of the night. Take it in the middle of the night. That'll be the best way to take it. Or take it when you're sitting on the toilet. Because, I don't know, you know, you sit on the toilet, you should take it at the same time. That would be a strange thing to do, right?
It would. But what about his question?
Well, I'm trying to answer it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, first of all, vitamin D is a very interesting vitamin. There's a lot of research on it right now. Right now, it hasn't been popped out as a bad vitamin, which means it's a good vitamin. And whether or not it does everything We don't know. But the reality is vitamin D3, probably 1 to 2,000 units, is beneficial. I think it's useful at this point. The research is sort of not exactly fully added on it. You do not have to take vitamin D the same time you take calcium. It's just often put in the same thing together because we know that you need a certain amount of calcium every day to prevent osteoporosis. So I would say, yeah, 1,000 to 2,000 units of D3 is fine. Now, if we have people with very low vitamin D units, levels, we actually give them 50,000 units of vitamin D weekly to bring up their store of vitamin D. But you can get too much vitamin D, at least theoretically, and it can produce a problem in the liver. I have never seen it. I have never heard of it other than a theoretical issue. But at 2,000 units, you are hunky-dory.
Yeah. So his taking vitamin D and then later another thing with vitamin D in it, 1,000 units each one. A couple thousand units
is just fine. So part of what he read on the net made sense. And the other part that he read on the net is makes net sense.
Did you
net sense is like nonsense.
Okay. Did you read something online that you're not quite sure about? Zorba's here to clarify the clickbait. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And I am not paid by Google to actually do this. I just want to make that clear. It's a non-disclosure agreement.
More of your calls coming up, of course. Another topic to talk about and our medical myth buster right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413, our number, if you have a question for Zorba. But Zorba, before our next call, a controversial herbicide in Cheerios and Quaker Oats.
Right. Well, when we look at breakfast cereals, especially with kids, there are some issues that are always involved because they're made with, you know, grains, and the grains are grown. And the question is, what about herbicides? And the herbicide really, which is Roundup, which is called a glyphosate, which is sort of ubiquitous in the development because it kills weeds around there. It's been used for years. And there is the Environmental Working Group. Now, that is a private group called the Environmental Working Group that is anti-pesticide. So let's look at who they are. That's really important. They tested 45 samples, and lo and behold, they found elevated levels of glyphosate in 31 of them. Okay. So not perfect, right? We've got these trace amounts. And the real question is, what does this mean in these popular breakfast cereals? So they're saying, well, they're bad. The cereals are bad. We shouldn't use it. Roundup is bad. Of course, in large amounts, Roundup is bad. Yeah. They point to the fact that somebody who was working in terms of taking care of a garden who got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He blames it on Roundup. A jury believed that, gave him $289 million. I'm sure it's going to be struck down. You know, Monsanto has to pay a person who got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. I thought $289 million, that is a ton of money for something you can't prove. But what it does is it opened up the whole thing about pesticides and food.
I hear skepticism on your part.
Well, the skepticism is, first of all, we don't know what these trace amounts mean. And World Health Organization has chimed in and said, well, maybe it's a risk, but we don't think it is. And the Federal Environmental Protection Agency issued a draft human health assessment and said it was mostly like not carcinogenic to humans. And then you have a private group that says, well, we don't believe that. We believe it really is carcinogenic. And I think as a society, we have choices here. And I really offer choice. So you can go and get organic Cheerios that we know then is manufactured with certain things that do not use Roundup. And you can pay more money. And that's really an important issue. Or you can get Cheerios. But the fact is, not everyone can actually afford organic food. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we have food deserts in our country. We have people who don't have the money to be able to buy organic food. And I think that's an important issue, too, because basically Roundup has made food cheaper. And that's why we have cheap calories in our society. So I am skeptical. And it's a private group. And they say trace amounts really are bad for you, yet the federal EPA says we don't agree with you. So it's really a function of which side of the controversy you come on. I'm the reporter.
1-800-462-7413 is our number. 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I have a daughter that, she's 21 now, but she was diagnosed 5 years ago with chronic migraine.
Mm-hmm.
They're constant. They're 7 days a week, 24 hours.
Wow. There.
But she's dealt with them mm-hmm. for a long, long time. But they also told her, they diagnosed her with have you ever heard of POTS?
POTS disease. How did she get that? Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, my goodness. She was diagnosed 5 years ago with that, but they say that that's a symptom of something else. And mm-hmm. it's like a blood thing, her blood pressure.
Yeah, I don't know that much. I don't know that much about POTS disease at all.
Right.
But getting back to her migraines, what does she take for her migraines now?
She did the Botox.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. And they have not put her on any, like, blood thinners or anything mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. But she's only had the pain mm-hmm. in her right eyebrow
for
all these years.
Yeah, but migraines can be very picky on where they occur. Going back to a second, so she's been on beta blockers before?
No, she has not been prescribed those yet.
She hasn't been on a beta blocker or a calcium channel blocker or anything of those?
No.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. How come? Those are really common to use.
You know what? I would love. I asked the doctor mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah.
She said that. She said I want to try the Botox first.
She wanted to try the Botox first. Well, first of all,
yes.
Botox we don't do first. We do Botox second or third. I mean, the first. So migraine headaches. Migraines are common. They're as common as dirt. They're really a very common thing. Continuous migraines are not that common. Intermittent migraines are common. So one of the things we do, and there are a whole bunch of things in the literature about migraines that can be worthwhile. Number one, for some people, and I'm just going to kind of rattle them off, a daily aspirin tablet can make a big difference. Simple aspirin tablet, 325 milligram Bayer or generic aspirin once a day can make a difference. For others, believe it or not, an Aleve, one naproxen tablet over the counter, Aleve, one or two tablets twice a day can wipe out migraines in many people. That can make a difference. But the prescription drugs that are very useful for migraines are beta blockers, such as propranolol. That's the best one. Highly effective in migraines. Very, very good drug. Works a lot of the time. It's a blood pressure and a cardiac pill, but it really works for migraines. Sometimes a calcium channel blocker, a different blood pressure pill, an ACE inhibitor, another blood pressure pill will work. That's another group. Another group are drugs like gabapentin or Topamax. Topamax is an anti-seizure drug, highly effective in migraines. Lots of studies that were done. I did some migraine research years ago, and we tested it. 25 milligrams of Topamax, which is topiramide, twice a day can be highly effective in reducing migraines completely. And then there are a whole bunch of other migraine drugs. Your daughter should go and see somebody who tries these different things for headaches. If she has not been on a beta blocker, she has not received standard of care for migraines. Botox is not the first step. Beta blockers are often the first step. So I would disagree completely with the doctor. Now, don't get me wrong. Botox can work. But come on. Beta blockers are cheap. Beta blockers are cheap and inexpensive. Botox costs a ton of money.
Yeah, tell me about that one. That one costs a lot of money. And
yeah.
I will tell you, this is not to be cruel, but mm-hmm. my neurologist that prescribed her the Botox also has migraines. So
yeah, well, I would go to another neurologist. I would go to, I would not go to a neurologist who stepped in Botox first. We have in my medical group, we have lots of neurologists. Botox is not the first choice. It's not the drug you start with. So you want to look in your area and you want to see who gets headaches. You want to interview, go within your health plan, and go to another neurologist. You need a different opinion. This that you need a different doctor for your daughter.
Well, thank you. That's some hope. Thank you.
You're
great.
Welcome.
Thanks
You're welcome.
So
thank
much
you.
For
Thanks
that
so
call.
Much for your call. Yeah. Sometimes a second opinion is the answer. And like I said, and Botox is very expensive, and I wonder why the neurologist chose the most expensive thing first that the neurologist then used in the office for migraine headaches. Now, I have migraine headaches. I don't get them as often. Beta blockers were highly effective for me when I used to get migraine headaches. If I injected Botox, I would make more money because I would be able to charge for the Botox. Could there be a financial reason for this? I would have to question that. And that's just what I'm doing.
800-462-7413. Have a question for Zorba? 1-800-462-7413. Now, Zorba, time again for our Medical Mythbuster segment. Today's question comes from Katie in Greendale, Wisconsin. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, can you talk about the 8 glasses of water a day thing? Does that include milk, coffee, and tea, which, of course, are all liquids, or is this recommendation a myth?
Well, the recommendation, first of all, is definitely a myth. I mean, who came up with 8 glasses of water a day? This was Kellogg. You know, back in the day, Kellogg, the guy who invented Kellogg cornflakes, also invented high water enemas. And part of the water treatment was you would go to a spa, you'd drink all this water, and you'd have enemas, and you'd urinate. And that was the whole concept behind it. We do not flush our kidneys. The kidneys are not a toilet upon which we flush. So hydration is important. And then how big is the glass? Is it 6 ounces? Is it 8 ounces? Is it 12 ounces? There are glasses and there are glasses. The reality is when you're thirsty, drink. When you're not thirsty, don't drink. When you're in a hot environment where, let's say, you're actually a band and you're walking around and you don't really have the ability to know how thirsty you are, then you really have to do things artificially. When you're running a marathon, you have to make sure you keep up with your fluids. But the 8 is not a magic number. It's just a number that they came up with. And all liquids count. Fruit juice, cola, Coke, fizzy water, coffee. It's all the same thing. It's 8 glasses of liquid. But once again, the real issue is for some people, they don't need 8 glasses of liquid. I'll give you a good example. My Aunt Myrtle, God bless her. She died a few years ago. She weighed about 105 pounds. Okay, so I've got my Aunt Myrtle on one side. And then I've got people in my office who weigh 250, 300 pounds. Do you think their water needs are exactly the same? My 89-pound, 90-pound Aunt Myrtle had less water needs, you know, because she's a smaller person, than the big, we'll say, hulking football player. That's 280 pounds. Look at your urine. We know what concentrated urine looks like. We know what unconcentrated urine looks like. And make sure you keep a good flow. And in the summer when it's hot or when you're exercising, then artificially drink more. Doesn't matter what the drink is.
When I was a little kid, my mother never had, you know, drinks, Coke, Pepsi, whatever, in the fridge. So I didn't get used to having them until we would visit my aunt and uncle and their 3 kids nearby. And they always had pop in the fridge. And when I said to my mother, oh, I think I'd like some pop, she said, you can have some after you have your 8 glasses of water.
That is really funny. And by the way, you know, pop is a Midwestern term. It's not called pop anywhere other than the Midwest. It's called soda.
Well, that's right.
It's pop is a Midwestern term, but that's right. Yeah, you can have it after you drink your 8 glasses of water. I love it. So I hope that answers your question.
Well, did you hear something that you think might not hold water? Zorba's here to help. Just post it to our Facebook page or send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Before we head out now, Zorba, as you know, I check the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Facebook page constantly.
I know that. I know that. You're
on my
Facebook
smartphone,
guy.
Jotting down notes and posting funny little emojis. So let's rip through another segment of Facebook feedback.
Facebook feedback.
First of all, were you impressed that I said the word emojis?
I can't believe it. When you said emoji, I was flabbergasted. My mouth was wide open. I thought, oh, my God, what is Tom on to even say the word emoji? You know what it is, of course.
I have no idea.
Hey, but you said it really well. Everyone thought you knew what you were doing.
I knew it was something, but I don't know what.
I got it, baby.
Okay, Zorba, we wanted to share a story from a listener named Emily. She writes, "Hi, Zorba. Dr. Kevin Walter at Children's Hospital in Milwaukee cared for my 24-year-old son, Andrew, who had spondylolysis and a non-healing back as she grew 6 inches between eighth grade and freshman year of high school and eventually landed at a height of 6'4".
Oh, my goodness. Gee.
Dr. Kevin put Andrew in a brace first, then PT, yoga, and Pilates, all strengthening his core. Kevin also sent us a sports nutritionist who did a food diary. We learned that I was underfeeding Andrew 1,500 calories, and he was bottomed out on his vitamin D level. So we upped the calories, and he took 50K of vitamin D for a few weeks, and with therapy, he was able to play basketball throughout high school and rugby in college. He has no slippage and is now doing long-distance running and coming to Baraboo High School as a new English teacher. We are proud and relieved that he's done so well. He minds his pain and does a lot of stretching, and he is now a foodie and eats very well."
Excellent. Excellent. Wonderful. Sounds like it. Good success. Good success. Shows you what modern medication can do, and in this case, what modern sort of surgery and other things can do to help him.
Is perfect. This all kind of unusual?
Well, I don't know how unusual it is. I think really the point here is that this is modern medicine, and that's what it is. And with work, you know, someone like that would probably be disabled forever, and they would have a crooked spine. And he doesn't. He has a straight spine, and he's doing a great job. It's wonderful feedback. It's great. It shows you that technologically we have come a long way in our society. If we look at it even from a longevity point of view, from 1950 until now, the average male has gone from 66 years to 76 years, an enormous amount. And a lot of this is due to better health, better nutrition, better exercise, longevity. Great example of a young child who, as an adult, is going to have a good adulthood.
Let's keep the Facebook love flowing, or you could always send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or come through Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen. Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
For more Zorba Pastor on Your Health, including episodes, recipes, and tips mentioned on the program, visit ZorbaPastor.org. This year, we're celebrating the show's 25th anniversary, and we want to hear from you. How has Zorba helped you out? What have you learned from the show over the years? Leave us a message at 800-462-7413.